The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Welcome to the final cabinet meeting of 2025, a year that will go down as the most consequential and successful first year of any administration. They're saying that, not me, oh, I say it too, actually, but the word affordability is a Democrat scam. They say it, and then they go on to the next subject, and everyone thinks, oh, they had lower prices. No, they had the worst inflation in the history of our country. Now, some people will correct me, because they always love to correct me, even though I'm right about everything. And mortgage rates, despite the fact that we have an incompetent chairman of the Fed, a real dope, but we have a guy that's just a stubborn ox who probably doesn't like your president, your favorite president, under my executive order to lower prescription drug prices, which I think is the single biggest thing we've ever done that nobody writes about, because you're fake news. So we're paying, as an example, for the, let's go with the fat drug, F-A-T, for fat people. Anybody use it at the table? Don't ask. So we have reduced drug prices by 500, 600, 700, 800, 900%, depending on the drug, depending on the company, depending on all of the different factors involved. Nobody's ever even thought of drug reductions like that, price reductions. And I told you the story that in my first term, I was so proud of myself because I reduced drugs. It was the first time in 28 years that drug prices were reduced. It was 0.25%, 0.25%. And I was so proud of myself. Now I got them down, not 0.25%. I got them down 400, 500, 600% and more. And the fake news won't write about it. Well, congressional Democrats want the largest tax hike in history. I proudly signed the largest tax cuts in American history with the Great Big Beautiful Bill. That's not even to mention AI, where we're leading China. You know, we're leading China by a lot. They're not going to catch us. We have to be smart. But if we're smart, they're not going to be able to catch us. They know that. They told me that. I imposed historic tariffs that are now bringing in so much money that we've never, nobody's ever seen anything like it. And countries that were ripping us off, including allies, but they were ripping us off for years. I won't use the names. I won't mention Japan. I refuse to mention South Korea. I will not mention names. I said, well, no reason to do it. Nobody's ever done it. I'll do it maybe, but there's really no reason. They said, sir, the problem is this is Walter Reed Hospital. And that's a military hospital. And that means that things are, you know, sort of open. It's not like private where you have, if you do poorly, you'll find out. I said, I won't do poorly. I'm a smart person, not a stupid person. And as the doctor will tell you, I aced it, right, Susie? I aced. I got every question right. And these are tough questions. These are questions that I would say 99% of the people that I'm talking to right now, meaning the people from the fake news, would not do well in those exams. But I'm the only one that took it. I got every single question right. And then I read in the New York Times, is Trump sharp? Trump is sharp. But they're not sharp. That's why they're going out of business, the New York Times. I hear that they're losing so much money, it's ridiculous. They're a bunch of fakers. America is strong and respected again. On the world stage, we're really respected. In fact, I went to a NATO and they were calling me the president of Europe. Every time I end a war, they say, if President Trump ends that war, he's going to get the Nobel Prize. If I end that war, well, he won't get it for that war. But if he ever gets it for the next war, now they're saying, if he ever ends the war with Russia and Ukraine, he's going to get the Nobel Prize. What about the other eight wars? India, Pakistan? Think of all the wars I ended. I should get the Nobel Prize for every war, but I don't want to be greedy. actually, the woman who got the Nobel Prize said, "You've got to be kidding. Trump deserves the Nobel Prize." And that was very nice of her. I appreciate it, which is true, actually. It's good. We're saving our country.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I don't want to be braggadocious. We're saving our country. Our country was going down and would never have been able to come back. We're saving all of us, but we're saving our country.
He is the perfect man to confront the fake news media, some of the funniest material I've seen yet from President Trump. He's still got it from 2015, 10 years on, still far and away the funniest politician. Some really hilarious clips in there. And there are so many moments in there where it is almost like he kind of baits the media into, you know, asking questions about his mental capacity, because he just speaks like a normal human being. And he's in many ways kind of like a parent talking down to their kids, having to correct the media right in front of everybody. And he leaves out a word here or there, which also makes it hilarious, but you know what he means. And then he takes the test and proves that he's sharp as ever, totally fearless in confronting the mainstream media. But then you look at the arrogance as well. Again, it's perfect for taking on the media, for taking on the press, for exposing them, because they're just as arrogant. And he, though, looks them down, rightly so. But then you just look at all of the pride in those clips. Again, it's funny. The way he's saying it is pretty hilarious. But talking about how much he did, how proud he is of himself. He is, again, the perfect man to confront the fake news media and the radical left regime. It's funny to watch him drive them crazy, but at the same time, he is totally reliant on himself. Mr. Gerald Fleury, in the latest Trumpet magazine, the lead article is "America at the Crossroads." He says, "President Trump talks about saving America, but it is not him saving this country, but God by the hand of this man." Later on, Mr. Fleury says, "President Trump spoke at Kirk's memorial, but he didn't say much about religion. He has spent his entire life relying on his own abilities. Even amid these terrible curses, this has not changed. Yet he also sees that people yearn for religion. That is why he gathers religious leaders around him. This is going to lead to the fulfillment of a critical prophecy in Amos 7 that I have explained for years. President Trump was prophesied to lead a religious resurgence, but instead of leading people to God, he is causing them to look to him. This nation is putting their faith and their trust in a man." And he says, and I'll play the clip in a little bit, but he is a man. He's physical. He's taking all of these tests and he's passing them. But even he says, well, I'm not going to go on forever. So what happens then? What are people going to look to turn to? Well, we know that he is the last leader that's going to receive a warning. We read that in Amos 7, at the first few verses there. It's about the affliction that the United States is going through. You put that alongside with 2 Kings 14, and you see that the United States was faced with affliction. And we'll go through that a little bit more on this show. But then there's a pause, verse 6 and 7. Then it shifts to, well, now there's this confrontation between Jeroboam and Amos-type figure. And those are the verses that we're leading into now. We're in this next phase, and you see how religious, or the religious people that President Trump surrounds himself with, but then the arrogance of just looking to himself. Again, the Trumpet magazine is not political. We're just trying to, you know, put you in or give you Bible prophecy's viewpoint on these things. A few years ago, President Trump was confronting the radical left. God was using him to save America temporarily. And the emphasis was a lot on pushing back against the radical left, which he was doing a great job of. But now we're in this next phase, as Mr. Fleury talks about in that article, where it is, you know, confronting that spirit and that attitude quite a bit more. Well, speaking of those first few verses, of Amos 7 that talk about the affliction that the United States was going through. Barack Obama, who, again, Amos 7 describes as him being silenced, this Antiochus-type figure. He occasionally will pop up, make some gross comment about the United States, then disappears for a little while. He's losing his power and his influence. But notice this clip that he gave about the media. This is clip one.
Is there one outlet out there that you would consider the least bias, sort of the most straight news?
Here's the thing. I actually think that the mainstream news still does a very good job of just presenting facts.
A very good job of just presenting facts. So you know that they're still on his side. He still has that influence over there. But look at just even the story about Trump's health. I mean, for years, it was about his cognitive decline. And in one case, there was the literal decline down the ramp. And they said he's losing it because he can't walk down steadily down a wet ramp that doesn't have a guardrail. And then we had to suffer through 4 years of Biden. The media just amazingly not curious about the president's health. They took off 4 years to say it's not really important. The New York Times, this is the article that President Trump was combating. This article is titled, "Shorter Days, Signs of Fatigue, Trump Faces Realities of Aging in Office." With headline-grabbing posts on social media, combative interactions with reporters, and speeches full of partisan red meat, Mr. Trump can project round-the-clock energy, virility, and physical stamina. Now, at the end of his eighth decade, Mr. Trump and the people around him still talk about him as if he is the Energizer Bunny of presidential politics. The reality is more complicated. Mr. Trump, 79, is the oldest person to be elected to the presidency, and he is aging. They love to go back to this, well, it's age. It wasn't age with Biden. It was clear mental decline. And I was talking to one person the other day who was reading about a CEO of one of these companies on Wall Street who's 99 years old. There's another one, I think his last name was Khan. He was 104, 105, still coming into the office. It wasn't age that was the factor with Biden. It was clearly something was wrong. So because Donald Trump is close to the same age as Biden, they make the same association. The New York Times says Mr. Trump remains almost omnipresent in American life. And yet somehow they try to say, well, his health is failing. He appears before the news media and takes questions far more often than Biden did. Foreign leaders, chief executives, donors, and others have regular access to Mr. Trump and see him in action. This is the same media that covered up for Joe Biden. They have unlimited access, pretty much, to President Donald Trump. He will talk to them anywhere, anytime, and they just lie right to your face about it or turn things into a scandal. I mean, to the point where President Trump he's getting full MRI scans and releasing the results to the public. Associated Press, doctor says Trump had preventative screening MRI on his heart, abdomen with perfectly normal results. And Donald Trump says it was a perfect MRI. Newsweek, White House reveals new details on Donald Trump's MRI. Again, just going back and disproving the stuff that comes from the anonymous sources at the New York Times that are able to confirm to a journalist that Donald Trump is dying or something. President Trump posted, "There will be a day when I run low on energy." Of course, that happens to all human beings. Hebrews 9:27. There is a point where death occurs. Trump says, "There will be a day when I run low on energy. It happens to everyone, but with a perfect physical exam and a comprehensive cognitive test that was aced, just recently taken, it certainly is not now. God bless America and make America great again." The amount of detail that we learn about the man Donald Trump it's exhaustive. The amount of times this man has been investigated, the amount of detail we learn about his health and his personal life and his friends and his family. And yet again, time and again, he survives all of those attacks. Attacks that have taken, you know, a lot of people out of politics. That's why they run these campaigns, because they've worked in the past, these smear campaigns. But boy, Teflon Don just keeps chugging away. And a huge part of that, the main part, is God's using him for a purpose. You go back to the July 13th, 2024, pivotal day in the history of the world. Notice this clip from President Trump. Again, I think this is at that cabinet meeting where he's talking about his health. This is clip 14.
You know, it's crazy. They don't talk about it. You'd think they'd say, well, Trump's done a great job in the border. This country is being destroyed by the border. But you always find something new, like, is he in good health? Biden was great, but is Trump in good health? I sit here, I do four news conferences a day. I ask questions from very intelligent lunatics, you people. And I give the right answers. There's never a scandal. There's never a problem. I give you answers that solve your little problems. You go back and you can't find anything, but you do stories about Biden was in wonderful health. The guy didn't do a news conference for 8 months. If I go one day, I had one day where I didn't do a news conference, there's something wrong with the president. You people are crazy. I'll let you know when there's something wrong. There will be someday. That's going to happen to all of us. But right now, I think I'm sharper than I was 25 years ago. But who knows? By the way, I took my physical. I got all A's, everything. But they said to me, would you like to take a cognitive test? I said, is it hard? They said, yes. I said, well, I'm a very smart person. Who was the last president to take one? No president has ever agreed to take one.
You know, how these men accomplish more as they get older. Mr. Armstrong was the same way. He was getting more done, understanding more. And a big reason for that is they just keep working. They just keep going. And President Trump doesn't have the greatest advice when it comes to diet, probably not with exercise, but the mental capacity, he just keeps going. He keeps working. He's engaged. But that point there where he says, you always find something new. You're the intelligent lunatics. I mean, it's always funny to take shots at the media. They're just such an easy target now. The media are responsible, again, for this story about Pete Hegseth. They're always working these schemes to take down Trump officials. They did it with General Flynn. And this latest one with the Pete Hegseth war crimes isn't any different. It was the Washington Post whose sources told them that Pete Hegseth, you know, ordered this kill them all order when these two narco terrorists survived a drone strike. And somehow that's supposedly a war crime. How did we even learn about this footage of these of this strike? Who was leaking that? Where was Hegseth? None of these details come up. Not to mention they're terrorists. Just end it and be done with it. The way the radical left would like you to operate, I could play the clip if I have time, is, well, because they survived the strike, even though they're bad guys, you have to go out into the water and rescue them. So you've got to risk your own life. You know, these are drone strikes. We're not putting any U.S. troops at risk to have an airstrike take out these obvious drug traffickers. They're not fishing boats. You could put up the B-roll of one of these confrontations. And these are clearly boats that are smuggling drugs. They have huge motors on the back of them. There isn't a deck for anybody to stand on. And in one of these cases, you know, these troops are confronting them. I think because they're softening up because of the media blowback. Well, just go and arrest them. They're not really that bad. They're just driving a boat. And what happens after that is, okay, now they're brought back to the United States. Taxpayers are paying to keep them in jail. They'll sit in a U.S. jail for however many years, and then they get brought before a judge. They're convicted, and then maybe a judge overturns, you know, the jury's opinion or whatever. And they know that. They're saying to these drug smugglers, give up when you get the chance, because some crazy communist judge will let you out. It's just a lot simpler to deal with the evil right away. Airstrike gone, bad guys gone, no drugs. And yet now it's turning into, well, we have to go and confront them because the media doesn't like the way we're handling it. But anyway, Hegseth didn't even give this order. The New York Times says Hegseth ordered a lethal attack, but not the killing of the survivors. According to five U.S. officials, I mean, it's just so funny. It's like the New York Times has a fake story about Trump's health. The Washington Post has a fake story about Hegseth. Then the New York Times runs, you know, a story that contradicts the fake news Washington Post. It's just layers of media nonsense, all from these anonymous sources. According to five U.S. officials who spoke separately and on the condition of anonymity to discuss a sensitive matter that is under investigation, Mr. Hegseth, ahead of the September 2nd attack, ordered a strike that would kill the people on the boat and destroy the vessel and its purported cargo of drugs. But each official said Mr. Hegseth's directive did not specifically address what should happen if a first missile turned out not to fully accomplish all of those things. And the officials said his order was not a response to surveillance footage showing that at least two people on the boat survived the first blast. So there's nothing to this story. And yet the Washington Post, they'll run it the same way they ran those stories about General Flynn coming in to be the director, National Security Advisor, the man who should be talking to the Russian ambassador. The Washington Post, David Ignatius, remember all the stories? Well, the Washington Post reporters wouldn't comment on the story. I think it was Adam Entis was his name. He said, this isn't a story that I can report on because statesmen talk to statesmen. There's nothing here. David Ignatius, he's a columnist, so he could editorialize it a whole lot more. So General Flynn is having secret phone calls with the Russian ambassador. And we have the transcripts. Listen to what these U.S. congressmen, Democrats, are saying how these narco-terrorists should be handled. This is an interview with Representative Adam Smith on MS Now, clip 4.
Was this self-defense, and how do the rules of international waters play into whether this was a war crime?
Yeah, in my opinion, no. This is not self-defense. And no matter where you do the strike, if it's not self-defense, then it's illegal. But people on a boat in the middle of the Caribbean carrying cocaine are not a direct threat to the lives of our service members or Americans.
Not a direct threat. That's really the line that they're going with. These cartels that come into our nation are some of the most violent people on the planet. Now, I don't know exactly where every single one of those boats are going, probably to, you know, drop off points on other islands. Some of them roll right up to the U.S. coast. Does that put American lives in danger? How many hundreds of thousands of Americans are being killed because of these drugs? Now, there's a whole other issue with the demand for these drugs in the United States, but it just makes common sense to stop the foreign terrorists from getting into the United States. Fight them off the coast. When you see them leave in that boat, blow it up. Not our problem. We don't have to deal with it in the United States. We'll deal with it over the water. We don't even have to risk a U.S. soldier being killed. It's just a drone strike. Blow up the boat. Not a direct threat to the lives of our service members or Americans. You know, it's just like what we were talking about with the Afghan refugees. You know, the whole point was, well, fight them in the Middle East so we don't have to fight them here. And now the Democrat position is you have to help them. You have to bring them here. I think it was just a couple years ago they finally finished the trial for some of the 9/11 terrorists. Going on 25 years, still haven't sorted that out. And the terrorists know that. If you try to destroy and kill Americans, the U.S. judicial system will take care of you. This is, again, how, well, I don't need to bother playing this clip. It's from The View. They're crazy. But they, again, talk about how, well, if those people, if those terrorists survived on that boat, the United States is obligated to go and rescue them, which puts the U.S. soldiers at risk. And it's not easy to do one of those operations, a rescue operation like that. You know, you really want to do it if you're trying to help out an American, not a narco-terrorist. And then, oh, they're so sympathetic to the people driving the boat. You know, well, they're not actually leading the cartels. They're just, it's their day job, and they're doing it for money. So, of course, just let it happen. Again, look at how the United States is being cursed, how this insane immigration policy that we've gone through since 2008, 2009 has fundamentally transformed this nation. Notice this clip. This is from Marco Rubio. He's talking about all of the Afghans that we tried, that Obama, Joe Obama tried to or successfully resettled in the United States over the last 3 or 4 years. Clip 11.
Here's the problem with vetting people. You can't have a perfect vet no matter who that person is for a couple reasons. The first is you can only vet information that exists, right? So it is possible that in many cases, there are things about these people you just don't know. No matter how much you vet them, you know, you just don't have certain information. And in some parts of the world where there's very limited documentation, very limited, you can't just go out and interview people in many cases because of the presence of the Taliban, et cetera, it becomes very difficult. The second thing you can't vet, you can vet what people have done in the past. You can't bet what people might do in the future. There's another dynamic at play here, and that is you could allow someone into our country who has no history of radicalization. Perhaps they even have worked with you in the past, but they are susceptible to radicalization once they enter the United States because they don't assimilate well, because they fall victim to some of this online propaganda and efforts to radicalize people. And 2 or 3 years later, you find that they have radicalized. That is a threat. That is a real threat. It is a threat for everyone. We have homegrown people, people in the United States born here that have been radicalized. But I do think it is a higher threat among people that come from cultures and backgrounds that make it harder for them to assimilate once they get into the United States, and that make them vulnerable to Arabic language, for example, propaganda by ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any of these other groups that are looking to radicalize people. So look, the bottom line is there is no effective way to allow hundreds of thousands of people to enter any country in the world and not face consequences. You take 100,000 people from anywhere in the world, and you're going to have some percentage of them that turn out bad. Either they turn into criminals or potentially terrorists.
It's such an obvious point. He's still pretty soft-spoken about it. And we were saying that at the time. You cannot vet all of these people. They opened the back of the C-17s. We're checking them. How do you check them? It's a third world country that's been a backwards terrorist haven for decades, centuries. There's no system in place that you know, tracks criminals, tracks their past. All the data that they had on people over there was because the United States was there for 20 years and was building that up. How easy is it for ISIS, who did this, we'll talk about it in a little bit, the Islamic State, the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, Iran, to just send people into Afghanistan, run to Hamid Karzai Airport because you're getting free rides to the United States. We'll activate the sleeper cell terrorists when we're ready. Give it a couple years. You can't vet them. Just leave them there. And again, like we've made this point, again, the whole thing was a mistake from the start to not go after the head of the terrorist snake. But to be there for 20 years, and again, to bring some relative stability to the area by just having a few hundred, I know it was a few thousand, but you could do it with a few hundred U.S. soldiers there on a base and Bagram Air Base to just keep some relative stability there. Instead, Joe Obama wants this war taking place on the streets of the United States, like Mr. Fleury has said about illegal immigration. This was Obama importing a foreign army because he wants civil war. He wants that unrest. And literally, instead of fighting terrorists in Kabul, we're fighting them in Washington, D.C. We're fighting them in Fairfax, Virginia. You probably didn't even hear about this story. I heard about it a few days. I thought it was a fake video, and then I read some more about it. Someone sent it to me again. This is real. You can put up the B-roll clip. These police in Fairfax, Virginia were pulling over this car, and it was an Afghan refugee that Biden had brought over. Didn't have, I think his license was out of date, registration was out of date, wasn't doing all of the things that regular Americans are expected to do. And in this confrontation, he's upset because he says, oh, I shouldn't have come over here. You police are exactly what they warned me about. You're doing exactly. So believes all of the CNN propaganda about how awful and racist the police are. And they're just trying to work with him. Then he actually says, I should have served with the Taliban. The police are still just trying to get him to calm down. And then he finally reaches for a gun and starts shooting at U.S. police officers, or Fairfax police officers, American citizens. And they have to shoot him dead. This is from Front Page magazine. You can keep that B-roll up if you haven't seen it. And this man, he reaches over. Somehow, for all the gun regulations we have, the Afghan immigrants are able to get a gun. Again, in Blue State, Virginia. And he opens fire on these police after saying, I should have served with the Taliban. And like Rubio said there, this is a totally different culture. And Islam hates the United States. And the liberal mind, you know, they try to sound nice. Well, we just welcome in cultures. The liberal mind, the Jobama mind, he understands that. He knows that. And it's why they want this. It's why they want to bring them all over. Because they know it leads to instability, that it will divide this country, that it will tear cities apart. Front Page magazine, Afghan refugees killed 55 people, wounded 92 in United States. They say, we left Afghanistan, but then we brought it with us. They don't specify the exact time period. I think it was just from 2021 to 2025 that there have been this many incidents. They talk about the attack just a few blocks from the White House in D.C. They talk about the two Afghans that were in contact with ISIS and were plotting a bombing on Election Day in 2024. They were caught. They're going through the court system. They'll probably just be released. They can just go back out on the street. It's the humanitarian thing to do. This article says, politicians in the media have claimed that Afghan guards and soldiers like these two terrorists were heroes and allies who protected our soldiers. In reality, they were insider threats. The claims that they can go back home to Afghanistan are a lie because they do it anyway. Despite demanding humanitarian parole in this country, this guy bought one-way tickets for his wife and daughter to go back to Afghanistan before they planned the attack. After he serves his term, Zada is set to be deported back to Afghanistan. Considering the two men were allied with ISIS, the only threat they face from the Taliban is being excessively good Muslims, not bad secular ones. And they go through and list some more attacks, attacks that you probably haven't heard about, stabbings, rapes. And there's the big one in Washington, D.C., right next to the White House, but it's all over the country. The whole idea of leaving Afghanistan, this author says, was that Afghans would no longer be able to kill Americans, right? It was the worst thing in the world if a soldier died fighting for the United States. And that is their duty. That's what they sign up to do. And that's why we honor them. It's a huge sacrifice to do that. But then we got it in our high, well, that this can never happen. It's the greatest tragedy in world history, and we need to just totally abdicate from our role as global superpower and just let these terrorists go free so that we can all just apparently live happily. Says the whole idea of leaving Afghanistan was that Afghans would no longer be able to kill Americans, but Biden's disastrous Operation Allies Welcome program turned the problem on its head by bringing 100,000 Afghans to America, and they distributed them all over the country. They're in random little towns. They're in little towns in Oklahoma. The previous distribution of visas to Afghan allies handed out over 50,000 SIV visas to supposed allies. Those unwise moves brought Afghan terror to America, and now our soldiers are fighting Afghans in the streets of D.C. Instead of leaving Afghanistan, we imported it to America. Now it's time to deport it back. And this is a fundamental transformation. A lot of these troops at the Karzai Airport in Kabul were just saying that the vetting process just couldn't happen. It was not happening. I spoke to one, it was someone in a town around here. I was at a business, and they brought up that their son was a pretty high-ranking official at that airport in the U.S. military. And he was calling them and just like pleading with them about how chaotic it was and how he was being told to not do certain things, really similar to what happened with those troops in Benghazi in 2011. You know, don't fight. Don't go back. This is bad optics. Leave it alone. And he's saying there was no vetting. You couldn't vet them. A lot of them are complaining about vetting fatigue. There's nothing to go by. So the assumption was, well, if we don't have anything on you, you must not be a bad guy. Let him in. Fox News, assault on female U.S. service member by male Afghan refugees at Fort Bliss under FBI investigation. An investigation is underway into an alleged attack of a female U.S. military service member by several male Afghan evacuees. So this is, again, the point being made that you're not fighting them in the Middle East. The threat isn't there. It's literally in U.S. military bases. It's in U.S. cities. They talk about just how many issues there are that are not being reported on. Representative Yvette Harrell, a Republican congresswoman who represents New Mexico's 2nd Congressional District, called the news a vetting failure. My prayers are with the courageous soldier and her family. This is yet another tragic failure in the vetting process for Afghan nationals. The American people deserve answers. And again, good for President Trump for addressing this, for bringing it up strongly, fighting back against the radical left, again, to save America temporarily from that affliction. Notice this clip. This is, I'll get into these stories about Minnesota and the corruption up there. And there's a huge population of Somalis who hate the United States, who come to the United States to take what they can get, to cheat the system, because silly dove, United States and Britain let them all in. And no one, again, wants to talk about these stories, just like the rape gangs in England. If you talk about it on social media, you're arrested for it. Even calling them Muslim rape gangs, you can't do that. They're Asian rape gangs. We're not gonna belittle this religion that hates our nation. It's an attack. You see it in so many ways. There's the ignorant liberal, but there is, again, the malicious ones where they know exactly what they're doing. Notice this is in Minnesota, and notice how they refer to this assailant. This is clip 15.
Man out on probation for sexual assault is charged once again. This time, prosecutors say he picked up a woman he met on Snapchat and raped her at a hotel in Bloomington.
Prosecutors once called this man an extreme public safety risk, but he never spent a day in prison for his previous crimes. Fox 9's Mike Manzoni joining us from our newsroom now. And Mike, prosecutors signed off on plea deals in these previous cases.
Kelsey and Randy, a judge sentenced the Minneapolis man in those cases back in May, but he got credit for time served, so he never went to prison. It was all part of a pair of plea deals. This is the man we're talking about. His name is Abdemahat Billy Muhammad, but prosecutors say the 28-year-old uses the names Kareem and Altesto on Snapchat, and that is where investigators say he met his latest victim as well as his two previous ones. Prosecutors say he picked up his most recent victim in Mankato back in September, and drove her to a hotel near the Mall of America, where he took her phone, told her she wasn't leaving, raped her, and held her against her will for days. That's according to prosecutors. Investigators used DNA to identify Muhammad as the suspect. His profile was already in the database from previous cases involving sexual assaults in Minneapolis in 2017 and another one in 2024. A Hedeman County judge sentenced Muhammad in May in those cases, including one involving a 15-year-old girl. Prosecutors say two other unidentified men took part in that assault, and one threatened the victim with a gun. But Muhammad never spent a day in prison, as we said, because he got credit for time served while awaiting trial as part of a pair of plea deals. We've reached out to the Hennepin County Attorney's Office for comment. A spokesman there told us it is checking into it.
We'll look into it. Minnesota man. And then, oh, read the name. Oh, okay. Of course. It's insane. It's an affliction. There's little stories like that in every big city and in a lot of smaller cities now and a lot of small towns. A lot of these people, they're brought in against the Constitution. And now Democrats say, well, it's a violation of their constitutional rights to deport them, to send them back. When everything they stand for is anti-constitution, anti-American, Ilhan Omar committed immigration fraud. And you see why Donald Trump brings up the birthright citizenship thing again, over and over again, because people have exploited that. And now people that are terrorists, that hate the United States, are protected by the radical left, protected, and as awful and as horrible as these people are, and disgusting as they are, how is there not more outrage about these judges? They are essentially complicit in these crimes. When they release someone that they say is an extreme public safety risk, where you know they're going to go and commit a crime again, and you let them go. Again, where does this lead other than to civil war? How do you stop those judges without all of the Democrats running out and saying, well, now you're attacking the judicial system. It's a federal takeover. And in many ways, I mean, unfortunately, that's what it takes to confront a lot of this. There just has to be king-like power to get the evil out, to confront these judges. You see the affliction that the United States was faced with, and we're hearing these stories now. They're happening all the time the last 20 years. Mr. Fleury, in September 2024, Trumpet Magazine, a race war is prophesied, wrote, immigration is one of the biggest concerns on Americans' mind in this coming election, yet most people fail to see the real danger. Why won't politicians secure America's borders? Many conservatives believe Democrats are importing voters. That is true, but the plan goes beyond just that. There is also a plan to sow division, confusion, violence, and terrorism. These people are essentially bringing in foot soldiers for race war and civil war. Make no mistake, this is no light matter to pass over casually. Race war is coming, the late Herbert W. Armstrong wrote in the October 1963 Plain Truth. Says racial tensions, passions, and hatreds are being deliberately stirred by organized planning. This was in the 60s. It will explode into mass violence that will stagger the imagination. It will be whipped into an accelerating crescendo until human blood runs like rivers. It's terrifying. And again, where do you look for hope? You can't put your hope in a man. President Trump rightly so addresses these things. But some of these issues are so complicated, so far beyond what human beings are capable of dealing with. And so few people have the humility to just beseech God for help. This story about a lot of these Somali immigrants, this came up in 2020. There were quite a few cases of a welfare fraud. In Minnesota, the state of Minnesota receives, you know, billions of dollars in aid from the U.S. government because of lockdowns, and they're spreading it out to these charities And these charities are just laundering money to their family members in Somalia. They're not using it the way that they say they're going to use it. Again, COVID was the biggest scam in U.S. history, but this New York Times article, again, there's a lot of fake news. Then they get some stuff right, but they won't explain all of it. Talks about this corruption in Minnesota among the Somali community is way bigger than we realized. And yet, look at who runs to the defense of the Somalis. Not the millions of Minnesota taxpayers who are U.S. citizens. They run to the defense of this minority group. This is the mayor of Minnesota talking about the federal investigations into the Somali community. This is clip two.
We are here to respond to a number of credible reports from several media outlets relaying that there are as many as 100 federal agents that will be deployed to the Twin Cities with a specific focus on targeting our Somali community. To our Somali community, we love you and we stand with you. That commitment is rock solid. Minneapolis is proud to be home to the largest Somali community in the entire country. They've been here for decades in many instances. They're entrepreneurs and fathers. They benefit both the culture and the economic resilience of our city. Targeting Somali people means that due process will be violated. Mistakes will be made. And let's be clear, it means that American citizens will be detained for no other reason than the fact that they look like they are Somali.
He won his election recently. He doesn't care what the rest of the Minnesota taxpayers feel or think about this story. He runs right back to the invaders and taking care of them and defending them as if, well, we're not targeting people because of the way they look. We're targeting them because there's rampant fraud. And he just says, well, mistakes are going to be made, so don't even bother with it. You shouldn't do it because you don't want to look racist. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 43 says, the stranger that is within you shall get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low. They were raking in millions from these schemes. I don't have time to play all of the clips providing these details. This is a few quotes from the New York Times. It says, how fraud swamped Minnesota's social services system on Tim Walz's watch. The fraud scandal that rattled Minnesota was staggering in its scale and brazenness. Federal prosecutors charged dozens of people with felonies, accusing them of stealing hundreds of millions of dollars from a government program meant to keep children fed during the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, no shame. You know, we're feeding, well, yeah, give us more money. We'll take care of the children. Why aren't the children being fed? We lost it. Over the last 5 years, law enforcement officials say fraud took root in pockets of Minnesota's Somali diaspora as scores of individuals made small fortunes by setting up companies that billed state agencies for millions of dollars worth of social services that were never provided. Federal prosecutors say that 59 people have been convicted in these schemes so far, and that more than $1 billion and taxpayers' money has been stolen in three plots they are investigating. That is more than Minnesota spends annually to run its Department of Corrections. In one case, hundreds of providers were reimbursed for assistance they claimed to have provided to people at risk for homelessness, though federal authorities say services weren't provided. And Minnesota officials just overlooked all of this, you know, ignorantly, just turned a blind eye to it. And to at least, you know, the president's credit, it was federal funding that went to Minnesota. So now they're going and saying, how was this money used? Let's follow up. Where was it? Look at all the fraud that they uncover. New York Times says, Kesa Megan, a Somali American who formerly worked as a fraud investigator for the Minnesota Attorney General's office, said elected officials in the state and particularly those who were part of the state's Democratic-led administration, the man who almost became the vice president of the United States, were reluctant to take more assertive action in response to allegations in the Somali community. There is a perception that forcefully tackling this issue might cause political backlash among the Somali community, which is a core voting bloc for Democrats, said Mr. Magan, who is among the few prominent figures in the Somali community to speak about the fraud. There's a lot of reports that it's just far more widespread than we realize. Speaking of unjust judges, one of these cases, a jury overwhelmingly voted to convict one of these fraudsters who stole $7.2 million. And this judge, a young female liberal judge, probably a Marxist communist, whoever knows where they went to school, found this little caveat in the way the evidence was presented and said that whole case needs to be retried. And the jurors were just gobsmacked. What are you doing? This was so overwhelmingly obvious, but she came along and she let him go. You know, the drug cartels, if we just take them in and we take care of them, we'll let them go. Again, it reminds me of that clip from Mr. Fleury where he's just pleading for justice. You know, what is wrong with wanting the law to be upheld? Why is there no justice in this land? This is a clip from Mr. Fleury in 2014 talking about America's immigration problems. And again, this is where we have to look for solutions. A lot of people are right in bringing this up and addressing it. But how can you save this country from descending into a civil war? This is clip 16.
America has a serious problem on its southern border, and the nation is deeply divided about that problem and many others. And did you know that that immigration problem is actually prophesied in your Bible? The British nation also has a serious immigration problem, and very similar in some ways to what's happening in America. And they too are deeply divided about that issue and many other issues. But they too, their problem too is prophesied in your Bible. God then goes on to in Deuteronomy 28 and says, well, now look, if you don't obey me, here's what's going to happen. Here's what's going to come upon you. And here's where we see something said that applies to our southern border in America and even to Britain's immigration problem. But notice verse 29, and you shall grope at noonday as the blind gropes in darkness, and you shall not prosper in your ways, and you shall be only oppressed and spoiled evermore, and no man shall save you. God is saying, now look, if you really want to be saved and you want to be blessed, the only way to do it is to look to God. You can't look to other men or it'll never work. They won't save you. They can't. Only God can do that. Cursed be the man that trusts in man. God says only God can save you. Notice where it talks about the stranger rising up above you and you'll get down very low, or the Gentiles. Then verse 52, notice this, and he shall besiege you in all your gates, and then until your high and fenced walls come down. Your high and fenced walls in your nations, what is that? Wherein you trusted throughout all your land. And he shall besiege you in all your gates, the Gentiles will, throughout all the land which the Lord your God has given you. Now, look, your high-fenced walls, well, that has to do with your borders. Of course it does. They're going to come down, God says, and cause you all kinds of problems if you don't wake up and see what's happening. And, of course, there's no indication they will. But there still is a marvelous outcome here, but this is all happening inside the border of two nations of Israel in this end time. That's what the prophecy is all about. You have a lot of people talking about, well, we should just have open borders, but is that what God said? No, it isn't what God says, and that's the kind of thing that can lead to and will lead to disaster according to Bible prophecy. Now, it also says, the land that I have given you, God gave America and Britain that land. Did you know that? And the big sin is that they've rejected God and not been thankful to God for all that He gave them, the very land and prosperity and the birthright promises. He gave that all to us. And you, if you don't understand that, you need our book on the United States and Britain and prophecy.
You won't hear that message anywhere else. A lot of people see the problem now, but that clip, that was from 11 years ago. You could find more from 20, 30 years ago that explain the state of this country. I'll just conclude with one quote from Mr. Gerald Fleury's booklet, Great Again. He says, Mr. Trump does an admirable job of identifying these problems and addressing people's concerns. His slogan is Make America Great Again. Anyone who sincerely admires this country wants to see America made great again. The Bible has a lot to say about the state of America today. It explains the inspiring reason why this nation was so great in the first place and why it has been so richly blessed. The Bible also prophesies that these blessings would be removed in our day. America's problems are spiritual, and solving them requires spiritual solutions. That is all we have time for on today's show. Thank you so much for joining us. If you want to request any of the literature that we've mentioned on today's show, you can visit thetrumpet.com. All of our literature is free. If you have any comments for the show, you can send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you for joining us.